It's one of those
technically banks owe us all money, you know, but you can never cash it in. So
cash it in, you know, forget it.
Yeah.
The only bank that gives me back money is like N26. They have this cash back thing. But I'm pretty sure, like, you know, like they're getting so much more from me. So I'm pretty sure now. I'm absolutely sure. So
what does that mean? So basically you spend and they give you like a small micropayment back, or is it
And I don't even know what's the calculation behind it. And I don't want to know, because it's like €1, €2, €3. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it's a token, but it's at least the signal, right? It's a positive signal rather than like just grasping your... Like, I'm using NatWest right now, like the worst bank ever. No disrespect to NatWest, but you really are terrible online. You need like three different passwords, none of which you can set yourself. They're like just alphanumeric things into it. And I'm just like, what is going on here? I stopped checking the bank account because, like, I can't go through that experience of figuring out these passwords. It's like absolutely appalling. Anyway, we're live, man. So we better watch what we say, because this is now broadcasting out to everybody. So welcome, everybody, to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 81. We've got an amazing show for you today. I'm super excited because this is actually one of the core topics always close to my heart. Tech recruiting, what has changed? What has 2020 done to one of the hardest challenges in recruiting? How do you recruit software engineers? So it's going to be a fantastic hour of conversation. We've got some great guests to bring on. Also super excited because once again, we've upgraded Adam Gordon, who is not in the co-host seat. And we've got Pedro Oliveira in to do the co-hosting. But before we begin and all of that, we have to do a sound check as we usually do. So if you can hear me okay on Crowdcast, can you just please say hello on the chat stream and say, Hong, yes, your audio is fine. We are multi-streaming, I hope. I think we're at LinkedIn. We should be okay. If you're on LinkedIn Live and you follow me there and you can hear me okay, just say hello there very quickly to say you can hear me. And we are live on Facebook as well. So if you can hear me there also, just give me a thumbs up or comment or get on with it, Hong, whatever. Let me know you can hear me there as well. That would be really good. Okay, that's fantastic. Thank you. We're getting some messages back. It seems that everyone can hear me. It's great. Quick word for our sponsors, by the way. Sponsors this week are Past Technology. Past Technology are an amazing referencing and background checking tool, one-stop shop for all of that stuff. I don't know whether you know, but basically having shifted everything to remote hiring, suddenly the requirement to do more due diligence and more professional, consistent due diligence on the people you hire is becoming a premium concern. So if you haven't used an automated or more sophisticated system to do background and referencing checking, you should really do that. You can't be chasing people up with email and phone call anymore. So check out Past Technology, folks. They got a 30-day free trial, I believe. I'm going to share the link in the chat stream there. So check it out. Okay, let's get on with the show. Pedro Oliveira, great to see you, man. And great to have you back on Brain Food Live. I think the last time you were here, I was actually in Lisbon. Your event, I forget the name of it.
Yes, that conference that we organize every year, except this year, maybe the next one, let's see.
Yeah, fantastic event. And hopefully cross fingers that, you know, there's a way in which, you know, that we can bring that back, because I thought that was a really useful conference stroke career fair type of combo, which is a really unique kind of feel, you know. So excellent. Pedro, for the people who don't know you, can you just quickly introduce yourself and, you know, what it is that you do?
First of all, thanks for the invite. I don't have the Scottish accent. I can try, but I don't think you will like it. So I'll just go ahead and introduce myself. I'm one of the founders at Landing.jobs, which is a tech recruitment marketplace. We operate in Europe, and you know, talent is from all over the place. And I also started recently, you know, within the same group, Future.Work, which is more of a career development platform, community and career development platform. We're still figuring out what it's going to be like. We're testing new tools into career development and tech recruitment. So watch out. MySpace, I guess. MySpace is not exactly... Ah, you still remember MySpace. Damn.
It's still going on, man. MySpace is still a thing. Absolutely.
Kill it.
But Good. Fantastic to see you back here, Pedro. And we'll talk about future work at some point because I think it's very exciting. Right. And we'll move on from there. So as we start with every sort of week, this is where it is the big thing. Like, have you read the newsletter? And if you did, you always say, of course, man. Don't be afraid to say you haven't. You know,
people are busy. I did. And I have proof that I did. First of all, I'm one of those even people that retweet every time you put it on your Twitter. It's the most basic form of support, but I do it every time. And I read it, and I know you're going to ask me for three of them. Three, but I have four. Is that okay?
That's totally okay. So four things excited you about the Recruiting Brain Food newsletter last week. What were those things? Let's go through them one by one.
All right. So the first one was because I'm you know that you know when I answered the 20 questions on Recruiting Brain Food, basically one of the things I'm into. I'm still reading the book Shogun, and I'm still drinking Nika. So first thing that struck me was the Japan shut-ins, yeah, and like all kind of culture of, you know, samurai culture, you know, end up like that. And it's not a critique. It's not, well, it is kind of, but it just was like, you know, crazy, you know. So that struck me to the heart. But it was pretty much that, just this self-realization of, how did that culture become this? It's crazy.
It's on that note, folks, I've just shared the link on the chat stream there. It's a really interesting article by Bloomberg. And it's quite an in-depth one. It's an in-depth case study of the, I think it's pronounced Hikomori phenomenon. And this is the phenomenon of basically unemployed single Japanese people who are now considered the lost generation, if you like. But they're now hitting the mid-40s kind of age, and they haven't progressed career-wise. They're still at home living with their parents, supported by their parents, can't find a way back into the job market, and living predominantly on the internet. And I read that. I agree with you. It's a very interesting – Japan's always interesting culturally, isn't it? Like very, very sort of unique and idiosyncratic culture. But at the same time, it's also for me like a little bit of a window into the future, because what the hell are we all doing right now? You know, we're living in front of the internet. We're, a lot of us are either unemployed or not fully employed. Maybe in future it will kind of look a little bit where the Japanese have been. So really interesting read, and I'd recommend people just digest on that, have a think, and you know, I guess, you know, not to depress anybody, but it's like, okay, what do we do about it? And how do we, you know, what can we learn from this phenomenon? And perhaps, you know, not go down there if we don't want to do that.
Yeah. What struck me the most besides that is also the dimension of the problem. And, you know, like I'm calling it a problem, not sure if it's the right way to call it, but the dimension is a bit over 600K Japanese people living with their parents over 40s. This is crazy, you know. So that was the first one. And then another one, actually, I saw it in the newsletter first, so I'll handle that to you. But then it resurfaced a couple other times, another one on Twitter, and then on the CTO's group that I'm part of, which is the Job Page Grader.
You know, yes, cool.
It's a very simple tool. You know, have a look. I have nothing else to say. Just it was maybe, I would say, three things from the newsletter. This is the plus one because it's just nice tool. You know, popped up a couple other times in my timeline. It was cool. You know,
quick one on the Job Page Grader, guys. This is actually an old tool that PH Creative, which is an employer branding company. They refurbished this, and I think they've improved it. And essentially what it is that you put your career page into this search field, and they'll just give you a report on it, on the SEO, on the usability, on the use of language. Is it inclusive language, for instance? And it will give you like a technical and also content style breakdown of your career page. And you have to pay with an email, basically. So you have to put your email in. but it's fairly cheap for what you get back. And it might give you at least something to work on if you're thinking about your career page and you're wondering, how do I improve that? How do I get better traffic? How do I do, et cetera? It might be worth you having a go. So I've just shared it again on the chat stream on Crowdcast there. I hope someone can also share that on LinkedIn if they can. Let me see if I can do it there as well. I'm going to try and be a little bit more equitable in my behavior here. Okay, cool. What else, Pedro?
So the last two, they are like related. It's about remote, of course. You know, the Kleiner, the 2020 Kleiner Perkins, especially the post-COVID workplace. So it's really nice. Coda, they're using Coda. When I opened it, I thought it was Notion, but then it's Coda, so it's very similar. And the 2020 report, it's really good. And if you check the post-COVID workplace, and then like what companies are thinking about, you know, going back to the office or not, and you know, most of them are like clearly aiming at the hybrid model. So that means lots of challenges and opportunities ahead for entrepreneurs, for companies, and for employees as well.
You're looking at the number one critic of hybrids, by the way.
It's a tough model, huh? It's a very tough. The easiest one is office only or remote only.
Dude, yeah. I think it's a transitional period where we're kidding ourselves that we can do it. Yeah. It's like running two operating systems on your computer. You can do it, but why? It's like a why scenario.
But you know, it's like having a Mac and then you virtualize Windows. Why would you do that? You know,
exactly.
Another laptop.
There's no reason why you would do it. And what would happen? I think you'll buy two laptops with Windows and Mac. But you would end up doing that rather than sticking it into a single machine. Right. And what will happen, I think, for business is that we'll end up just having departments that, okay, you need to be in the office. Great. We'll just parcel you out. And there'll be a bigger separation between that and, you know, the folks or departments that can work remote. So I think we're kidding ourselves a little bit to think that we can do this because it's just going to be massive cultural overhead to do hybrid. By the way, I've just shared the report there. Two things about the Kleiner Perkins thing. Number one, I really like to see them back because they lost Mary Meeker about a year ago. Mary Meeker, by the way, does the Internet Trends report. I think everyone reads that. It's like the biggest report on comes out every year. She left to set up her own VC. And I think Kleiner Perkins basically lost one of their biggest marketing type of assets by that happening. So it's great to see them go and publish something like this. It is actually on the back of a survey from their portfolio. So sample bias there, of course. So check that out. But I also like the implementation. As you mentioned, Pedro, Coder AI, I think it's a really great tool to try and present it. It's very similar to Notion as well. The only thing I thought was a little bit missing from this is that it didn't allow anybody to go on to additionally collaborate on it. Because it might have been like a cool thing if there was a way in which, you could volunteer additional stuff into it, which Coder AI allows you to do. I might do something on Brain Food with this, by the way, because I'm very excited about the idea of getting the community to produce and contribute more because they want to do that. And right now it's just filtering bottleneck through me and it makes no sense. So anyway, watch this space. Okay, one more, Pedro, before we get smarter people onto the show.
The last one is, I had to say this one, the Chris Hart Twitter thread.
Yes.
So this guy is a marketing Twitter genius of sorts, and he did another one. And, obviously, hey, he's selling his own stuff, but who isn't? So it's okay. And one of the things that struck me the most, and I'm pulling this one up because I'm from Portugal. I'm in Lisbon right now. And he mentioned that in the future, regardless of if it's hybrid or not, there's going to be a lot more remote on-site when this COVID thing is gone. And, most popular locations is Portugal, Spain, and Puerto Rico or something like that. But, Portugal was first, so I was happy about that, so I'm highlighting that one.
You have got a huge chance, man. I mean, not only Lisbon. I think people will end up...
Portugal in general, yeah.
Yeah. I think that all those little towns across the Tagus, right, all those little towns that people ignore, they're going to start being populated by, I would say, everyone who's a digital worker is going to pile into those places.
I love this. Also, people are getting out of the big city. A lot of people lived in Lisbon because they had to. And I really hope they go away because it's overpopulated. I'm from Lisbon. I would love people to go away so I have an emptier city, more livable city. But like this. That's what they call the Barcelonization of cities.
So we're moving
a bit through that. So I think maybe COVID was good in that sense that we can explore the rest of the country as well.
Dude, COVID is a huge leveler. It basically squashes metropolitan centers, in my opinion, and it will spread, hopefully, economic wealth around, which is what we've been wanting to do. You know, a big part of the reason why we have the Brexits of this world and the Trumps of this world is because regions are kind of struggling against the cities. And COVID-19, in a very strange way, forces the distribution of jobs to different places. So hopefully this will work. I think countries that have simply nice climate are going to be massively in the benefit here, simply because, you know, if you're going to work remote and it's going to be, you're going to lose the big city, why would you not go to a nicer place? We've got Katie Pichard here. She might be joining us later. And she's in Malaga, right? I mean, why not? you know, it's like good choices. There's another thing that I need to talk about very quickly is the threat. And again, I'm not sure whether threat is the right word either. But ultimately, the leveling is not just going to be national. It'll be global. And there's going to be, I think, a government reaction against this. And there's going to be a big tension between what maybe the people want and what the companies want versus what the governments want. Countries are going to say, hey, you can't relocate that job because we need that job here in this country. And then suddenly... So in other words, remote working, the natural logical next step to remote work is to offshore the job because you might end up working with somebody who is equally good, but costing far less. Why not? You know, as a business, that makes sense to do that.
Yeah, but governments are going to step in for sure.
They're totally going to step
in. It already happened in another situation. I can share this. It's public, but, you know, kind of like Portugal and Finland are kind of like cut ties in a way, because we like the Portuguese government as a strategy of like attracting, let's say, retired people to, you know, bring in all your savings and spend it here, right? So it works really well, like with France, Netherlands and stuff. With Finland, it started like happening more and more to the point where they cut ties, but like it wasn't really relevant for reports. So it's just a situation where the government steps in because they want the Finnish people to spend the money in Finland and not in Portugal. I mean, you saved all your savings and now you're getting all the money from the Social Security coming to Portugal and spending it here. So the system is corrupted somehow, you know? So it's just an example. A very micro example, but definitely it's going to happen. And when that Social Security money is not coming in, oh man, the state is stepping up.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting, folks. And it's going to be a big challenge on what we want the our human future to be. Because one of the, like, we complain about immigration, but the reason why people come to rich countries is because we're accumulating the wealth, we're agglomerating the wealth in the same way a big city agglomerates the wealth to the regions.
Oh, sure.
People go to there. Now, if we don't want the immigration, then we might need to tolerate the job flight, because if we push that out, then people won't come. But then, of course, the country will have to get used to a different standard of living. So we've got two major trends that are going to be in tension, and I'd be interested to see what people think about that. These are deep topics, probably deeper than a Brain Food Live. Going to need bigger brains and what Pedro and I can muster to solve this problem. Sure. We only know about tech recruiting, man. So let's talk about this. Okay, before we bring on Ala and Manjuri, and maybe Katie as well, let's talk about tech recruiting from a before and after scenario. So the setup of this show is going to be tech recruiting before COVID was hard, man. This is the reason why landing jobs exist, why Workship was set up. It was like, how do we solve this? No one enjoys hiring software engineers. Now, has it got easier? Because let's say everyone is now remote, surely that means suddenly, whoa, global talent market, it is easier to recruit software engineers. And yet I look on the poll that people have been filling in and like 100% of people say, no, it's got harder. So it's a very interesting phenomenon there. Actually, one person said it's easier. So it's quite an interesting phenomenon. And I want to just ask you a quick overview, Pedro. What your thoughts are currently, like the big changes that COVID-19 has wrought on tech recruiting particularly?
So I think, like, when you think about the let's say talent recruitment funnel, you know, before the funnel, let's talk about strategy. All right. So, and I think the talent strategy became a lot harder. First of all, because we're living in this period and we don't know what's coming next. Okay. So then when you see all those news, like Google is going remote and stuff like that, what they're saying is for the moment they are, but they still don't know exactly how it's going to be like post COVID. Right. So I think this is the biggest challenge, is like understanding how to position yourself. What's your strategy for tech recruitment, you know, in general. You know, in terms of the funnel itself, now let's talk about the traction all the way to the let's say post-hire validations that you mentioned at the beginning, which was one of the things. So I think some things became easier, some other things not really. So let's put it like this. A big blocker before was like bringing someone into the office, logistics with developers, yeah, with tech. That's gone. You know, you need to do it online with the tech assessments, tech interviews. I've hired remote people entirely that I've not seen before, and it's fine. You know, it's okay. So I think that part became a bit easier. The beginning of the funnel, the attraction, it really depends on your strategy, all right? It may have become easier or harder. So if you're not going remote, especially with developers, the more remote you are, the easier it will be to attract. That's the simple rule, you know, and we see this in our platform. The more the remote job is, the easier it will be to attract.
That in itself is the fundamental truth. I mean, the research, I mean, this is going back years. Developers have for a long time wanted flexibility of location, and companies will always default to full-time permanent on-site. And I think a lot of the reasons why companies have struggled is because of the location issue. You got to pull this person to the to this location, yeah, if you can't compete on salary with the big boys. So that goes away hopefully with remote, but it also means that you need to be able to do remote properly. I think it's hard to compete if you're mm-hmm. in a sort of a second tier city and you don't offer remote, then I think you're going to spend a long time looking for that software developer, you know. It's going to be really tough. Okay, one more thing that you thought was an interesting phenomena that's changed in tech recruiting before we bring Manjuri, Katie, and Alan on.
So, and again, our conversation is going to be more about post-COVID, but obviously we cannot overlook the moment we're living. So what we felt in our marketplace was, there was, especially in April and May, there was a big bump of new people looking for jobs, so active talent. But after that, it kind of like went down. So the turnover in companies is lower than it used to be. We got some feedback from clients that this is happening. So it's good for the companies in a way, even though like you need some sort of healthy turnover. But at the same time, it's like the market is a bit more stagnated. That's the way that we feel. So it's harder for the attraction part. So if developers wanted remote jobs or more remote jobs, I'm using the expression more remote jobs because sometimes they don't want the full remote. They just want the like 4 days a week or 1 day a month going to the office, some sort of thing. And, you know, it definitely comes into play now with the COVID. To attract is a lot harder right now. And after post-COVID, I mean, especially this sort of like professions, engineering, let's put it just the engineering, and I'm separating engineering from, let's say, product engineering. My advice for companies is like go full remote or almost full remote. For product, I mean, you can have like I know you don't believe in hybrid, but the more hybrid-ish approach to it. But it's a big mess. So I think like right now people are struggling with the strategy. That's the core thing, and it's a big mess.
You know what? Let's bring some people on that might be able to talk to us about strategy. So I'm going to bring these ladies on together, actually. Why not? Let's get five people on screen at the same time. Can Brain Food Live handle it? I don't know. Let's bring on Manjuri Sina, and I see Ala Pablo over there as well. Let's bring her on also. Let's see if that can happen. And I believe Katie's there as well. So you know what? Let's see if I can bring Katie on as well. Boom.
Might as well bring everyone, you know.
It's one, you know what, that was the original purpose of Brain Food Live, was to literally bring people out of the crowd and say, yeah, let's come and talk. Which actually I might do back again for Christmas, because Brain Food Live is happening on Christmas Day and we're going to do a long show there, and it might just be like a free-for-all, you know. Okay, hey everybody, how are you doing? So let's do some introductions first. So Manjuri, great to see you. And for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what do you do?
Well, I'm Manjuri. I hope you can hear me. Just give me a thumbs up if you can. Hey, thanks. Hi, Katie. And I'm a panda lover to begin with. And I heard Pedro and Hung talking about landing festivals. So A lot of segregation, a lot of super bok, and the big panda is what I always remember from Landing Festival. I miss those. Hope we can get back to those.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I head tech talent acquisition for OLX Group. We are across 30 countries in the world. And just to summarize, tech hiring has not become easy, and Pedro is actually helping us with tech hiring for Lisbon, and it's a challenge, but I'll talk about more later.
Yeah, that's very interesting to get this international view as well. Ala, really good to see you. Welcome to the show, your Brain Food Live debut. Quickly, for the people who don't know you, can you introduce yourself, like who you are and what do you do?
Yes, thank you so much. I hope you also guys can hear me. This is one of the first things you say, eh? You're muted or you can hear me. Yes, thank you so much for the opportunity. And yeah, my name is Ala. I'm a technical recruiter at Miro. And I also building tech communities for the Slack. And I will be happy to tell you a little bit more about new challenges that I face and some great stuff that I learned from the community sourcing and recruiting.
Fantastic. Great to see you there, Ala. And Katie, great to see you. Quickly again, who you are and what it is you do, Katie?
Hey, thanks for the invite and spontaneous jump on this show. Really, really happy to be here. Katie is also fine. I'm currently based in Malaga, from where I'm heading the talent acquisition team for the workshop. We're based actually in two locations, in London, where everything is happening, or not anymore, and Malaga, which is, the sunniest capital of Europe, I think. And prior to that, I spent some time in Berlin, working for SoundCloud, Native Instruments, and Google. And even prior to that, in another top-tier city, Barcelona, where I was working for various clients. So been in recruiting for 10 years, and well, here I am reinventing everything from the scratch.
That's amazing. You know what I really like about this, we've kind of got a European kind of vibe going on. I mean, the timing of this prevents sort of the US folks from joining us, but hopefully this will give us at least a good snapshot as to what is going on with tech hiring in the European context. Manjuri, let's go to you first. I mean, you mentioned straight away that you don't think it's actually getting easier, even though, you know, on some level of intuition, you might think it is because of this, you know, movement to remote. But how would you explain, like, what's your explanation as to why it's become more difficult to hire software engineers?
Hey, thanks, Hung. And I think Pedro kind of outlined it very well. I would add to that saying that we complicated matters ourselves. So during the, and this is also a learning from an exercise, no one knew, you know, something like COVID would happen and the impact would be like this, of course. So most organizations put a hold on hiring. And if you stop the momentum on tech hiring, that is one of the biggest hierarchies that you can do in the hiring history. And that's one of something that we are facing. So very recently, I've also seen this impact on LinkedIn. You have a lot of companies now wanting to quickly hire tech recruiters. I see that in the Berlin market. I've been seeing this in the Lisbon market as well. So between April to June, we saw companies really put a hold on hiring and advertising, which is fair. Of course, you want to protect your employees and your contracts and so on and so forth. But putting a stop to tech hiring, that is, and especially engineers have really pushed pushed the momentum into the funnel backward. The second bit is
oh, also, hang on, Manjula, yeah. let me stop you there. That's a really interesting bit of insight, which I hadn't considered actually, that there is actually a momentum involved in recruiting. It's almost like a river of talent. But if you stop the flow, it actually becomes really difficult to restart it. Particularly if one of the ways in which you dealt with lockdown and the early stages of this pandemic is to get rid of your recruiters, for instance, you know, you suddenly have to retool. So you've lost your capability to do the recruiting. So that's a really interesting bit of insight in terms of why tech recruiting now is harder. Okay, so I like that one. You were about to say something else, Manju. So I'll let you finish that before we move on to some of the other guys on the show.
Yeah, the second bit was on this whole dilemma of should we go remote, should we not go remote, should we do hybrid, should we do flexible, but 2 days, 3 days, and what kind of mode we are in. Just to take an example of my own organization, since we work in different countries and across the world, we've seen COVID in waves. So Europe happened, then we saw the impact on India, we're seeing the impact on LATAM, now we are seeing the impact on Europe once again. So this conundrum continues. Take an example, Codility did a survey recently, and they presented it to us because they're partners for our assessment. And they presented that 76% of engineers said that they are happier in a remote setup. And this ideally, and 64% of them said that they are less likely to leave. So there are two things that come out of this. Number one, we definitely have to consider going remote. We need to figure out how to do that. Number two would be on the fact that this will become a competitive edge for organizations to actually go remote. And I won't hog the limelight. I'll talk about it a little later of how we are strategizing this and maybe also how Pedro is helping us with this. But no, I'll be happy to talk about how we spoke to our stakeholders, how we presented data points to our stakeholders, and actually now have started hiring remotely in Portugal as well as of this week. So there's maybe more later on that.
Super interesting. I just want to tease out a second really interesting point you mentioned, Manjuri, which was that the expectation from the engineering community is now that remote is mandatory. It's almost like, of course it's remote. And because they are remote, there's less interest in moving. Quote unquote, even moving is probably the wrong term to use now, isn't it? Like all of it is about like the physical proximity of it. But let's say you have got configured your home setup to such a point where you're quite relaxed or you've sorted it out. You know, let's not forget that engineers are quite highly paid. They're not precarious workers. The people that have over the past 10, 15 years or so managed to achieve a reasonable material return for their skills. They've got a nice setup. They've got everything sort of sorted out at home. They can deliver their work. Maybe they're switched off in terms of their job demands now. They don't have to necessarily, it's not as high a priority for them. Super interesting. Okay, let's have ask the same question to you, Ala. I mean, you're working for Miro, which is the mind mapping tool, isn't it? A really cool app. So everyone loves it. I don't actually, I have to say, but that's because I'm incompetent at mind mapping. Literally, I don't like it. But I think it's I have no keyboard skills. So I have a hardware interface problem. So it's not on the product at all. Tell me about what you found when it's come to sort of recruiting software engineers, particularly before and after like the pandemic. Is there been like a big shift in your view? And if so, what have you seen?
Yeah, thank you so much. I believe that's also same experience. Some things became easier, some things became harder. What became easier, it's something that as a recruiter I was always dreaming about, to unlock the location, to be able to hire a person from everywhere. This actually helps to change the team, change the direction, and actually change the product as well. And Miro, of course, is the company, is a product that helps people to also, you know, communicate effectively. Even we kind of advocate and help people to work remote and to have this grasp of different information, different types of information in one place. So, and seeing each other moving things in this, you know, whiteboard and making fun of it. So that's, I think, exciting. What I also, you know, recently noticed as well, that I hear a lot from the engineers on the interview saying to me, hey, I've heard about Miro doing that, or I've heard Miro is up to this. And I catch myself that online companies became so important, and we have to cover different channels. And this is the challenge that I see. What became harder is to attract the talent from different resources, podcasts, from the, I don't know, video like YouTube channels or Slack or Discord. So it became so many different ways how you can do that. But it also made my job a little bit more creative. I have to put more efforts. So it's also what I like about it as well. And I kind of became a little bit closer with my candidates as well, because when I'm talking to them, I'm calling when they're at home. You know, I see their cats, dogs, kids, like delivery guys coming in. So what I changed recently also the length of my call with the with people, and I always start with the icebreaker, and I always start, hey, how was this 2020 for you? Because sometimes you can hear some things that will scare you, some things that will change your, you know, way how you're going to approach this candidate, because I hear a lot of complaining, hey, candidate has to look for a job and they're not motivated. I think that this is my job actually, to make person to fall in love with Miro, and hun, I'm going to do that with you. So so I will show you why Miro is awesome.
I'm a hard sell on this, because I'm so like incompetent. I think I know what it is. I need to draw it with a pen. Anything that isn't typed, I need to get a physical device to draw it with, and I can't type it in. But anyway, you mentioned two really interesting things there, Ala. The first one is that with like diversification of the contact channels that you need to have with software engineers. It is like moving into consumer type channels. You've got to be on YouTube. You've got to be on, you've got to be podcasting. You've got to be open, using all of these different types of places, which you might not typically consider to be sourcing channels. But there are new places where you can interact with these highly skilled in-demand people. Second thing I thought was really interesting. By the way, the reason why I break this up, folks, is so that you can make notes. So this is what you should be doing. The second thing you said that was really interesting was that it's possible to increase the intimacy that you're getting with the engineer, because everyone's doing it from their home. And that's a very different experience from being in an office. They're in an office, you're in an office, or in a booth somewhere, you know, where it's like, yeah, of course you're going to be so utilitarian, but like your life bleeds into your what you're doing. You know, your cat's going to walk across your keyboard at some point, that kind of stuff. And that's going to help you, you know, close the gap in terms of relationship building. So that's a very interesting point for any recruiter out there. There's ways in which you could probably accelerate the process of intimacy, I would say. Okay, super interesting. Let's go to you, Katie, on this. Katie, I do beg your pardon. I've been calling you the wrong name all this way through. So, Katie, what would you say that you've spotted as a difference between pre and post? Not that we're out of COVID, but you know there's a big kind of before COVID and whatever's going on after with regards to software engineering. What does that look like for you? How does it feel like for you?
Yeah, so I don't want to call it a difference. I want to call it maybe an enhancement, because I realized there is a lot of topic going around engagement, something that everyone mentioned before. So, for instance, take candidate experience. Even prior to COVID, we were aiming, and I'm talking about different experiences I had with different companies. It's been a really, really big topic. We were aiming at, you know, white glove kind of experience, great engagement. Nowadays, after you know, the job market kind of started opening up June, July, we've noticed that people are really sensitive, and this is something you can expect during world pandemics. Any word here or there can be, you know, took as an offense, could be, you know, disengaging candidates. So you have to build up on really like authenticity, sensitivity. Employer brand, no longer about shiny offices, no longer about perks, you know, video game machines, etc. And I'm talking about video game sector. I mean, the sooner the company started talking about how we support mental well-being, how we treated employees during COVID, this has become, you know, a new normal to actually answer those questions. How have you dealt with the first wave? So we can expect what will happen maybe in the second or third. So coming back to engagement, what I've noticed is obviously with different furloughs, layoffs, you may notice an incredible amount of active applicants, but this doesn't translate back to the engagement. Again, you are in a position, you might be calling someone and this person, you know, just really easily clicked on the role. And maybe this is not the right person for the role in the moment because they are just looking for opportunities. So you have to make an extra effort to engage with that person. Now, last but not least, remote onboarding and making sure how you engage post-hiring. So how do you make this person welcome in the virtual setup? Programs like working from home buddies, you know, sessions to integrate, maybe not always, you know, using cameras and Zoom calls because it gets really, really tiring. You have to be creative with that. And you have to be creative to make sure that in those first weeks and you get the momentum, and regardless if you onboard a person next street or, you know, in a country 5,000 kilometers from where you're based. So this is what I see, you know, as a challenge, but as an opportunity at the same time. So being closer and, you know, managing a team previously in two locations now. You know, back in the day, people would ask me, how would you manage remote teams? This is a skill on its own, but I feel the two teams in London and in Malaga are closer nowadays that we have joint stand-ups. We also share the different learnings. And yeah, I would say that's the major thing.
That's really interesting, Kadi. You mentioned three things there. I've forgotten two of them because I was trying to recall the first one. And the first one I thought was really important. We're going to go back to the other two, which was the, like, employer branding has got serious. Like the trivial era of employer branding is over. Like, as you say, you can't talk about the nice office as if it's of any of interest whatsoever. It is about mental health. It is about what have you done, even at a society level, you know, what have you done with DE&I? Those types of things are going to be much more significant than, you know, all of them. So there's a shifting of investment and focus, I think, less on the accoutrements or the embellishments of the culture, more into the root of it. You know, what is the culture really about? So I think that's a really important point. Go ahead, Kelly.
I forgot one more thing, like really important and no one named yet, events, conferences. Really, really big source of applicants, of getting your name out there. It went virtual, but I would say it's no longer the same. Like we try to sponsor, you know, meetups and go to conferences that go online. But let's be honest, that's also a new skill, and not everyone has the chance to gain it in those, you know, 3, 5, 6 months, right?
I can add something in there, which is so. With the Landing Festival, some of you have been to, for us, the organizers, was hard to track like what happened, but it knew stuff happened because people kept coming back. So that was the main metric. We've done some events like, you know, online job fairs, these kind of things. We can track it, but it's not the same. Okay, so we get that tracking power now for real, but it's not the same thing. All right, so we definitely lost something in there, let's say employer branding wise, and then also talent acquisition wise.
You know what, on the, I think there's a gap there for right now for us to have a really sort of a ground up online event where it could be a candidate generation exercise. I wonder whether maybe Landing could be the ideal type of organization to try it actually. And I agree, the webinar style is not effective. We all have been on, I don't know how many webinars now. I would be very surprised if there's anybody watching here that hasn't seen like 100 webinars over the past 9 months. You know, we've been into like a ridiculous volume of them, right? Including BrainFood Live. This is effectively a webinar. However, it's not the same experience as networking. And I think one of the reasons why people would attend events of this type, particularly if you're doing a careers fair and stuff like that, is that the engineers want to talk to each other. You know, they want to connect with other people and share that information as well as speak to employers. And how do we replicate that? I think there's some bits of tooling that can help with it. I think maybe you could try Discord, which is a natural environment for developers, I would say, but also allows for more peer-to-peer type of communication more naturally than broadcast software, which is what sort of webinar tech is. There's a really cool tool called Remo from a bunch of people from Hong Kong. So Hong Kong represent on this. I looked at it and I swear to God, it looked like a restaurant floor plan app. You know, if you've ever worked in a restaurant, I have obviously, Chinese person, we worked in a restaurant and it basically you see like a bunch of tables and a bunch of seats around those tables. And how it works is people sit in those tables and a face pops up and a name pops there, and then you can go sit next to that person. I thought on a few conferences that I've seen using Remo, I thought, wow, they actually have mastered the experience of networking as well as listening to talks. Thank you, Ala, for sharing that. By the way, SoSu Virtual is happening next week. They're going to be using Remo. So if you want to have that experience and you're looking for work or whatever, if you're a recruiter that, you know, is interested in checking it out, definitely check out SoSu V next week. Someone share the link in the chat stream there. Okay, cool. Let's open it out to everyone. Let's talk about DE&I. Always a big topic in tech recruiting, folks. This was the case probably pre-COVID. We were thinking that this is going to be the primary thing, right? How do we diversify tech, right? How has COVID-19 impacted this mission, if you like? Any thoughts?
Can I go first? Probably I shouldn't, but I will. I had a topic. It's not directly related, but it's correlated, which is international hiring. So obviously when COVID kicked in, that stopped, you know, all hiring processes or most of them kind of freezed. What we have been realizing is, and also this is related with the country's behavior, for instance, let's say Brazil and the United States, their behavior with the COVID, let's call it the COVID experience, was not the best, let's put it like this, and that kind of created an influx of international talent coming to Europe. All right, so that's an opportunity right there. All right, so you're talking about diversity. Let's bring in more people from South America, from North America to come to Europe, because this is now an opportunity, and it started recently. All right. It's kind of a boost. Sorry.
Time out on this though, because I'm actually quite surprised at that comment, because I would have imagined that with pandemic and lockdown plus push to remote, that has killed relocate, hasn't it? Is that not true?
No. It's just it's two things. So first of all, it did in the first place, but it started coming back because the talent is like, okay, if I didn't want before, now I want to relocate. And it brings in a couple of other questions, like, are we going to pay these people until they actually relocate? Okay, so that's one question, because they can start working as Katie mentioned, they can onboard them remotely, so they can start working remotely, and then at some point they will relocate in the future. And I feel there's a stronger push for this right now. So sorry for bringing this up. I just felt like it's related, it's correlated.
Actually, I want to touch on that just a little bit more, because it's a really interesting phenomenon that you mentioned, which is the COVID experience per country is different, and people's perceptions of whether they want to stay in a country might actually now, you know, be even more sensitized. So, for instance, Brazil, especially in Portugal, for you guys, like always been a great source. And it's like maybe now you can go like go to town on this and get people to come. So very interesting to hear that that view. Lots of different things coming up. But okay, and I do agree related to DE&I because internationalization is definitely a facet there. But let's talk about other parts of DE&I, particularly with gender diversity. Because prior to COVID-19, we were thinking, you know, how do we get more gender diversity in the tech industry generally in our businesses? You know, we're getting sick of rolling around with tech teams that are 95% men. How has COVID-19 impacted this negatively, positively? Thoughts on this? Everyone but Pedro.
I think I can, if I may, add something to that, Hong.
Go.
Yeah, okay. I'm just waiting for you to do the go. So positive and I would say a little bit negative as well. Positive side was also connected to the to the conferences and meetups that that you were talking about earlier. So yes, it's, you know, you have lack of networking, but the reach has become humongous. And this is where we saw the positive results. We participated in Women Tech Global Conference, which is usually restricted to 1,000-1,500 women in tech. However, with the virtual conference this year, they could actually, you know, go and reach out to 100,000 women in tech from all over the world. So the sessions, the booth visits were from different countries. And since we have group companies in different countries, we could really take advantage of that. And we saw that we could bring women into our pipeline, source them, and actually had some hires also from that conference. Similarly, we took advantage of, you know, you'd have to also, when you look at it financially, when you sign up with one conference and invoice it, you're actually taking advantage of that globally. So we did it. We attended a Women in Tech hackathon in India, which was global as well. But we could take advantage for our Indonesia offices as well for such an event. And the reach was really, really humongous. So that was really good. It gave us the time because during this time, hiring was on low and only critical hires were happening. So all the, you know, all the folks from all the recruiters could also participate and we could have speakers, etc. So that was one good aspect. However, yes, researchers have shown that, especially on the side of gender diversity, because of the, especially countries where men do not share as much as, and I'm Indian, so I know it happens, you know, way back home in India, a lot of men do not share the responsibilities. So, and you don't have a kindergarten system as prolific as it would be in Germany, and where I'm sitting right now. So the lady or the woman would have to handle the kids, plus ensure that, okay, they are being, you know, they are on Zoom and they attend their classes. Plus she'll have to handle the household chores. Plus she'll be on calls and handling her 9-to-6 job as well, right? So with this, they don't really have the time to prepare for your code live sessions. They don't have the time to prepare for your interviews. So it is an added hassle for them and they would not participate in these processes. So this becomes a bigger tug. Some researchers also show that more women have stepped back from their jobs or taken a break, plus not really applied to too many positions across. So this has been, and we see this a little bit in our engineering pipelines for sure. In India hiring, it's really dry. We have to really, really go out and source a lot in the language. Whereas if I trace back to last year, October, November, our India diversity numbers were really pushing us up on the gender front. But this is a very different scenario we see right now from this example. It has a cultural context definitely to it.
Super interesting. Anybody else got any thoughts on this? Gender diversity in particular, we thought about DE&I as a subset, but gender diversity in tech, what's everyone seen in this? Pedro, you can speak. It's fine.
I can go next if that's fine. I've been thinking about an article I've read, and I think Manjuri shared it earlier this week, about senior women, so women in leadership, another interesting topic, and I've been always really passionate to build gender pipelines and, you know, 50-50 split at all levels, because that's the role modeling we want to bring up. I think pandemics, also working longer, because that's a fact. We all work longer. It's harder to disconnect. Burnout is real. And oftentimes, you know, the share of what Manjuri mentioned of household activities is on women's shoulder. And oftentimes you even end up in this sandwich model. If you were, let's say, 40, 50 plus, oftentimes you don't always have children, but often also parents to take care of. Oftentimes you're relocated to a completely different country than you're from. Hello. And that's really taking like an emotional toll on women in leadership. So there is a huge appeal coming from women like Sheryl Sandberg to protect women in leadership in those circumstances. Also because, unfortunately, the emotional labor of, providing support to our reports, to taking care of their emotional well-being, it often comes down to women in leadership. On another note, not only gender diversity, I think about COVID as also a class phenomenon, thinking about, people coming from unfavorable backgrounds, having maybe less access to schooling, to better education. So that's definitely something thinking about future pipeline. Whereas there is a huge opportunity to provide equal educational opportunities, let's think about, housing conditions when we were all confined and maybe we are again confined. Think about, this access to networking, access to connection, apprenticeship. How do you actually do apprenticeship or internship in times of virtual work? That's a really, really great question to ask. But finally, on the plus side of D&I, working from home and working, not always with camera off, might attract people with different cognitive diversity dimensions. As an extroverted introvert, I actually thrive in this environment because you can choose different modalities and focus. So I think this is a huge chance also for people who were not overlooked in the office environment, not very extrovert. So on that note, I think that's a positive effect.
100% on that particularly that last point, Kari. We're going to go back on all of this and go to you as well, Ala, in a second. The reason why I want to interrupt really quickly is because if you have any questions for our marvelous guests, please ask them in an ask a question function at the bottom of your screen on Crowdcast there. If you're on LinkedIn Live, you're on Facebook, you want to ask a question, just comment. And I've got, I think Jo McCaddy is helping me with that. So she's going to pick that up and then ping it over to me. And then hopefully we'll be able to get to those towards the end of this show. Okay, Ala, let's go to you as the final thing. DE&I, particularly with regards to women in this case, or gender diversity in a better way of describing it. How have you seen it before, after? What do you think?
Yeah, of course, it was a hot topic for all the times and for all the companies. But to be honest, I'm looking at this from the perspective of the candidate even more than as a perspective as a recruiter. Of course, as a sourcer, I can find lots of ways how I can source for this candidate using names, special communities and everything. But what I was recently thinking about, for example, test assignments. I was talking to the HackerRank and they are trying to create the test assignments without putting any personal information about the person who completed the test. So I would like to create the ways that the company is making everything to make sure that there is no bias, there is no anything standing between the candidate and someone who is assessing the skills, no gender, no any other things. And so what I was thinking about, like making sure test assignments are fair for every level, for any person who is applying as well. And I hear a lot from the candidates, I don't want to be diversity token. Was your company before already diversity friendly? And this is, I think, that's also a very important point for myself as well. I need to make sure that my company that I work with is showing that we care, you can trust us, and it was always important because it's not mainstream. So this is the point that I'm trying to deliver as well.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, I'm gonna have to replay this from the comments. The last the three of you have mentioned some really, really interesting points. Just to cover real quickly, though, on the one hand, we have a global marketplace. We push the remote. Suddenly, our reach, our absolute reach, is bigger. So potentially at the top of the funnel, we might be able to secure greater diversity there. Might be, you know, asterisk. And then of course we have the kind of variable impact of remote working, which in many cases is gendered. Let's say the classic example we mentioned: parent, young family, young kids, etc. What is the distribution of labor when it comes down to teaching those kids? You know, is that entirely equitable at home? We don't know, but we can maybe guess. Perhaps the woman is going to take on more of that that responsibility than the man. And factoring in your initial point, Manju, also with cultural context on there, right? It could be that certain roles are very much perceived to be women's work in some cultures. And that would, again, you know, create a differentiated impact on COVID. Okay, cool. Very interesting. Guys, we're moving kind of towards the end of the show now. So I want to just move forward to some projections, if you will. We've kind of been doing this for 6-9 months now. Let's just point it forward for the next 12 months or so. Where do you see tech recruiting going? I mean, is there going to be, we're kind of going through this period now. So what is your feeling, like one thing that you think is going to happen in tech recruiting that is going to be like a persistent phenomenon for us? And Pedro, count yourself in as one of the people that can answer this question.
Right. So first of all, it's a tough question, but I will try to answer. So when I'm looking at this as 2021 and 2022, so let's say global wise, like what I'm predicting is next year it's going to be a shit year, like economy wise, and the year after is where things come back to really pick up, right? So 2022 is where things pick up. Now, all of us, we're lucky that we work in a sector called tech, right? We're very lucky people, all of us. And I think that took a hit in April, May, but it's going to be upwards from now on. Okay, so a lot of companies realized that they need to digitalize themselves. They were living in the past century, so they're coming back to reality, to the tech reality. So I think it's going to be good for tech. Now, this doesn't mean like a huge increase. No, it means higher increase in some specific professions within tech, like let's say people working with RPA, with AI, this sort of things, okay, automation processes. So I think there's going to be more opportunities within tech for some folks rather than others. But overall, we're good. We're in a good place, and we need more people in. Okay, so that's the problem that we have right now. We need more talent in this market. We need, and the universities are not going to cut it. We need more people in. Alternative formats of training, of education, like boot camps and other things. We need more people in. I'm not saying people that are graduates from universities are bad. Well, I'm one of them in computer science, but we need diversity. This is a form of diversity, by the way. That's what I predict. So we're lucky to be in this sector. It's going up, but not as before. All right.
Yeah. Really good point, Pedro. So what you're saying is one of the impacts of COVID-19 in this period is that it's a massive digitization push. Firstly, everything goes remote. Suddenly companies are going to realize all of your previously analog processes are really problematic. The ones that were already digitized, they're the ones that actually continue to work. Exactly. So we're going to have a huge digitization approach. That means more software, probably less people, but more software, therefore more people building that software or supporting it or doing whatever. So there will be a little bump, at least a bump, in terms of software recruitment, I would say. And as you say, not back to the crazy time pre-COVID, but definitely better than 2020, 2021. Okay, exactly. Great. Let's go to you, Manjuri. Give us a prediction. 12 months, or actually using Pedro's framework, let's assume next 12 months is also a write-off. But we're looking at 2022, you know, that kind of period. Where do you see tech recruiting?
I'll take a different angle to this. I'll talk about tech recruiting. We'll need to consider capabilities, different capabilities of engineers. Today, we rather focus on the functional aspect. I think the what we call as soft skills may become more important. So we'll be looking at capabilities like agility, resilience to change, ability to collaborate across different countries, continents, flexibility, and also the ability to own your own development. That is, you may not be the masters of the universe, and TLC will not be in the manner of a beer fridge, because you can't just present that to people. So I think that those capabilities will definitely take front stage for tech leaders for sure. Communication will take front stage as well, because you'll have to onboard leaders who can handle remote teams, like Katie was speaking about earlier, right? So that will become really, really important and hard to predict, though. This is just a gauge and a hunch that we are seeing things trending towards.
Amazing. And I love that. I think you're entirely right. You know, that what we kind of call soft skills, hard skills, you know, that kind of division and hierarchy, actually. You know, we've always prioritized hard skills in tech recruiting, but perhaps in the future, we need to think about collaboration. We need to think about communication. These skills are actually of premium at any role, but particularly in software, which is a collaborative activity. Okay, cool. Let's go to you, Caddy, on this. Prediction, 12 months down the line. 18, 24 months down the line. What's it looking like tech recruiting-wise?
So I'm going to build up on what Pedro and Manjuri mentioned. I'm not a fortune teller on that one. We've already started implementing different behavioral questions to actually focus on those soft skills, resilience, and also looking at how people would adapt in those uncertain circumstances. We see that there is more flexibility between what kind of projects may come up, so creativity becomes at a very, very different level than it was. I saw this article about behavioral interviews are dead. Let's discuss how would you react to what's coming up next. So these resilience questions are also trying to figure out how people reacted similarly as companies during COVID to see how the soft skills resonate in the future. And I believe, the acceleration when it comes to the usage of technologies, automation, AI, That's gonna just continue even faster. Potentially we will see something, not even bootcamps for really fresh people, but for people who are used to certain technology but have to build up very, very quickly. And you see you have to actually update your skills really on a daily basis. So that's a challenge for a lot of technical talent as well these days.
That's a really good point, Caddy. Like, your ability to acquire new skills is also going to be a premium for all people, really. I'm going to come to you in a second, because I've just realized I asked people to ask questions and there's two questions and I haven't actually asked them. So I need to go ahead and do that. This is to everyone, by the way. First one, this is from Daniela McDonald. She's saying, when you talk to candidates, are they looking for different things from companies and jobs now, are they looking for different things from companies or the jobs now? Has anything become more important than before? Okay, so have candidate priorities changed? Only one person can answer this, so whoever wants to grab it, go grab it. Who's up for answering this?
I can.
Go ahead.
Sorry, because I feel I've been talking a lot. The top number one question from the candidates is, how did you support? How have you supported your employees? How will you support if, future is unpredictable? So the expectations on mental and well-being and being able to provide this nice flexibility of work-life balance, to me, that's a theme. And you cannot also come up with answers that are not authentic.
Yeah, 100%. I think the realization of companies need to be more than just profit maximization. That for developers and technical people, I think is very, very strong. Okay, thank you, Carrie, for that. One more. This is from Kenneth Kay from LinkedIn. Thank you, Joe, for putting this over to me. Essentially, the assertion is companies are moving away from visa sponsorship. Doesn't that create a massive bottleneck with regards to diversity and inclusion efforts? Anybody want to take this? The first assertion, I'm not sure it's true, but let's talk about that. Well, are companies moving away from visa?
Thinking about that, not sure if it's true. Like, what's happening is the bottleneck, like for the those relocations, is the situation itself, like airlines, visa, like even the local entities to issue the visas, all of that. That's the bottleneck is there, like in the governments, in the institutes, and airlines, because the will, like people moving out, like. There's a lot of Americans moving to Portugal right now.
This is true, Pedro. But what Kenneth is saying is that companies are now not thinking sort of about sponsoring visa. Is that? I mean, what do you think?
The question is like it makes a kind of sense. But the thing is, like, what's happening? We're talking about tech, okay? What's happening is people are working remotely until they are allowed to relocate. The thing is that timeline is going to be longer than people think. That's it. That's the only thing. So what companies need to do is sort out payments. Are these people going to be contractors? Invoice them? Are you going to use some sort of tool to do that? Are you going to manage that? So that's the only thing I have to say.
Yeah. Anybody else want to respond to that? Are companies more reluctant to sponsor visa or not?
Actually not. And I align with Pedro and Katie on that. Actually not. It's a bureaucracy that is stopping companies right now, because, again, you cannot fly the family over. You cannot, if the embassy is slow, you cannot get the work permit. And from certain countries, unless you're freelancing, then you can't be on rolls because of tax purposes and so on and so forth between EU, non-EU candidates. So that's the challenge that companies themselves are facing right now.
Got it. Okay, Kenneth, I hope that answers the question. Ala, we're going to go to you with a final word on the show. Give us a prediction. 2022, what does tech recruiting look like for you?
Thank you. So I was actually hoping that it will start recruiting on March, but I think it's too early. So then, as we're stuck a little bit here, so I would say that what Miro Wedge is doing is adding extra skills to everyone in the company. All recruiters right now having sourcing trainings with me, and I'm helping them to love and to try sourcing from the different perspectives. But also what I think we are going to be better at planning. So we will plan... who we're going to hire, how we will be having very good focuses. We will really go through the process. And what is also, I think, I'm quite a positive person. I think that we will focus on the long-term strategies. We will start building communities. We will encourage people to join them. And so this, I think, community-driven recruitment, this I see the future. So.
Yeah, amazing. And I agree with you. Community-based recruitment, that's actually going to be critical, because I would say an incumbent worker right now who's tech is going to be hard to shift because they're very risk averse, but they're happy to have a conversation with you. And I think a lot of tech recruiters right now might be very frustrated that they're having these great conversations, but they're not converting the candidate because the candidate is like, hey, of course, I'm not going to move right now. Are you crazy? However, what they need to do is think long term. And I think the way to do that is via community rather than through a pipeline. But more on that later, more on that on another show, because we are out of time. So thank you, everyone, for watching Brain Food Live on Air episode 81. It's been an awesome show. I think we could continue to talk to these amazing guests for a long time. So firstly, let me thank them. Manjuri Sina, thank you for joining the show. Amazing to see you. Great to see you as well, Ala. We'll talk about Miro at some other point. I'm now inspired to investigate this. I'm ashamed, actually, of my incompetence. So I'll dive into it. And Carrie, thanks for jumping in last minute. I know you got loads of things happening in your private life. Good stuff, I understand. But we'll talk about that a bit later. But yeah, great to see you here as well. Okay, that's about it, everyone. If you've enjoyed the show, make sure you follow the channel. We do this every week, folks. Every Friday, we do a show like this. Next week, we're going to be talking about recruiting KPIs. Same concept. Has that changed before or after COVID-19? Time to hire. Is it still 30 days? Is it 50 days? Is it 5 days? What? We've got Andrea Marston from VMware going to join us. We've also got Marissa Bryan from Succeed. It's going to be amazing. So follow the show. You'll get an update on that event when it's happening. Okay, final point. Thank you to our sponsors again, Pass Technologies. If you are hiring anybody remote, on-site, or otherwise, you need to background check them. Use Pass Technologies to do that. Much faster and better than chasing by email. Okay, that's about it, everybody. Go and enjoy your lunch and enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
No, everybody stays.
I'm staying. There's always, I tell you what we're going to do, Pedro. There's like
a game.
No. This is like the behind the scenes, right? Because everyone disappears, which I like. Not that I don't like, but it's like everyone's left the party. But then we've got to clean up the party, right? And it's always cool to just have a chat. So anyway, it's good to see you. Tell us about Future Works, man. I mean, you mentioned at the beginning it was like a little bit of a – you're still exploring the value problem.
We're still – so like we – this is probably the second biggest innovation in 2 years. So last year we went like full speed to contractors. So we now have people working like as contractors. That's cool because especially in a country like Portugal, it wasn't really a thing, you know, like it's more of like outsourcing this sort of thing. So that was cool. So that's what we did last year. And then we started Future Works as a brand. So it's going to be the organization's mother brand, if you want to put it like that. On landing jobs is everything about recruitment. We're going to have the event as part of Future Work. So it's going to be a community. When you said community-based recruitment, I was like, bullseye. That's it. You know, community events like tech with, you know, a place where people can go and learn and interact with each other, with their peers, online, offline, both, doesn't matter. Hybrid events. Actually, I went to one as a speaker. It kind of sucked, by the way.
Tell me about hybrid events. This is you showing up and no one else.
So I went to one event. It was a agile conference, so more tech thing. And then I went there as a speaker. There were like, 10 other speakers there? So everything according to the rules is fine. I was part of this panel, and the thing is, there was like a Avery's booth there with someone like, but the whole thing was weird because there were like 30 people tops, but then watching live there were like 2,000, and what the organizers told me was like it was chaotic to organize it because you had to cater to both experiences. Exactly the same analogy we're saying with the Macintosh and the Windows laptops. You have to do both at the same time, and it's crazy, with the same amount of resources. So it's just crazy. So that's one thing. And then we're going back to the Future Works conversation. We're doing what we're doing is we're testing new career products. So there's one that is going really well, which is a talent agent. So maybe we can talk about this later, but this is what a talent pays a recruiter to help them find a job. You know,
right? So like a sports agent type of person.
Sports, arts, it's the same thing, but you know, the agent doesn't get paid as much as the Jorge Mendes guy, right?
30 million or something.
That guy is crazy. I don't understand, but okay. So we're doing that. So that's going really well. And that's what I'm saying. I'm getting a lot of relocation people. So people like from Brazil, Nigeria, India that purchase this product, then they get like specialized 5-session job search with the job with the talent agent kind of thing. So the key is in the pricing. The way we did it is they pay 100 euros up front, so kind of a retainer, and then they pay the rest, which is extra 300 euros when they land the job.
I see. That's good.
And people go like, oh, that's the pricing. Okay, I'm in. Especially for introverts, for, you know, and it's already working. We had an Italian girl that was in Porto. She relocated to the UK.
Yep.
And she did like a coding bootcamp online. She coded something like that. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest, that's not the thing that companies are like looking for, you know.
Dude, and this is actually really interesting, man.
Because it's cool and it's deep. You know, we're really helping these people. So I'm really excited about this specific product, but there's more things we're testing, like learning and coaching as well. This thing, it could be a product on its own, a brand on its own, because the only guys I see doing something about the like this is placement.com or .io. They are a San Francisco company, but it's different. It's like the high end, you know. It's the when I'm targeting like everyone, like not the low end, but the 99%. Let's put it like this.
You know what? That's a really there's two interesting topics there. Community, I think I'd love to do a Brain Food Live on that. Actually, that would be an awesome one. Yeah, we'll bring you in for that. The talent agency angle. This is something that people have really talked about for a long time, and no one's figured it out. And I think the main problem is typically the exclusivity idea. Like the candidate is not going to pay because, you know, they'll generate a job elsewhere. You have to track how that works. So what are you going to do? Chase them up? Not going to happen. But if they're relocating, they may be super dependent on you as being their eyes and ears on the ground. So you've actually the conduit to opportunity more. And that's where, you know, you could genuinely add the value. And as you say, price point is, I would say, reasonable. More than reasonable, particularly when you've backloaded it, which means that, you know, this is post this person getting the job. So super interesting, man. Okay, listen, final question for you. What do you think of the show? Is that okay?
I think it was cool. I think it was, there was no fighting or anything, but for me, it was like when the diversity question came, I'm like, I'm out, guys. Like, okay, I can say like I'm a Latino white, so, you know, I get some extra points there, but I'm white. So it's a white male in tech. I mean, like, I feel that because I'm part of the CTO's Portugal community, and if you think there's not enough women in tech, like developers, then talk about leadership roles. That's like there's almost no one. So it was a concern that we had. So we are three co-organizers, me and another guy from Porto, and we brought in a girl, Italian girl that moved to Portugal, because we had this concern, like we want the heads of this group and trying to influence some things in Portugal as well to think about this, because sometimes we care, the guys, we care, but we don't get it. So we always need a female to, even if it's just to say, hey, don't forget about this angle, you know. It's just for that.
Dude, that's a really good distinction I want to just pull out, because you can get it at a rational level, but you don't like viscerally get it because you haven't got the lived experience.
You'll never get it, 100%. You can be an ally. You can be a great ally, just an ally or something like that, but you will never get it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Anyway, listen, we're still broadcasting, by the way. I should have told you that.
Anything I wouldn't say publicly.
That's it. It's like behind the scenes, man. You know, it's off-puts, it's free content. I don't know. Anyway,
this is the best part, right?
This is where we should crack open a beer. Like, we should create like a
beer moment.
Like, we have a beer moment, or we have some chill out moment and say what we really think. All right. Anyway, listen, man, you have a very good weekend. Great chatting with you. Great to see what you guys are doing. By the way, I don't know what Diogo's mentioned to you, but we're probably going to do some stuff with landing, which is going to be
something. But I mean, operationally, this guy is all over it. Follow up with Diogo is the
best. Yeah, absolutely. I just want to let you know I'm excited that we've got cooking in there, so it should be cool. Awesome. You have a good weekend. I'll catch up with you whenever. Hopefully, we'll catch up soon. Let me know what is new, okay?
All right. Cheers, man. Bye.
And there's still 23 people watching this broadcast. Folks, you need to go and get some lunch. I will see you next week.